Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Proverbs 31:8. Welcome to Orphans No More. I'm Sandra Flack of Justice for Orphans. Joining me today is Johnston Moore, adoptive dad of seven kids and executive director and co-founder of Home Forever, a Christian nonprofit that advocates for children and supports those who envision a world where every child has a permanent family. Welcome, Johnston.
Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure to have you with us today. And Johnston, you and your wife, Terry, have seven adopted children, all through foster care, and their ages are 24, 21, 20, 17, 16, 9, and 6. But you knew that.
I did know that.
You did know that.
That.
And I take good notes. We know that now. And so you've got a full house there. What led you to begin fostering and to adopt?
Well, you know, I think the seeds were actually planted when I was a child. Growing up on my dad's side of the family, I had four cousins that were adopted. Out of six total cousins on that side of the family, four cousins were adopted. And so it grew up. When I was growing up, it was just normal to me. And, you know, adoption was not, you know, like a second-rate way to build a family or anything like that. It was just a way to build a family. And my cousins were not my adopted cousins. They were my cousins. And loved them very much, and so it was very normal. And then when I went out to the University of North Carolina, I started getting involved with a ministry called Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and through that, I ended up volunteering to lead a ministry that we an outreach ministry that we did a couple of times a week throughout the school year, where we would drive to a juvenile detention center and hang out with at-risk kids. These were juvenile offenders. These kids had murdered, raped, robbed, et cetera. Very difficult backgrounds. And we would just build relationships with them and play softball, basketball, volleyball, whatever, just get to know them. And I think that's when God started to expose me to more and more to at-risk kids. And through that, I was also exposed to apathy in the church, which was a little bit disturbing because we would get together. You know, all these Christian kids, you know, we probably have 150, 200 of us get together, and we would worship and play games and talk and listen to a speaker and all that kind of stuff. And it was great. And then I would make an announcement saying, hey, we needed people to go up to visit the kids. And it was like pulling teeth every week. I mean, you know, we maybe had two carloads some weeks. Most weeks we would just have one carload. Everybody was just too busy. And it was kind of interesting. I noticed that my roommate, who was not a Christian, he was, he partied like a lot of the kids there, and a lot, and yet he was very faithful, and he went every single week, pretty much. And so I was really struck with the apathy, you know, apathy that I saw in the church at that time. Fast forward a few years, I after college, I got involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I had a little brother named Al Walker, and Al was awesome. Loved spending time with him, hanging out with him. Just saw again the needs of at-risk kids, and you know the need for these kids to have relationships and connections. And then met my wife, my future wife. We got engaged, and then one night I just said, "Hey, you know what? I want to adopt one day." And to my surprise, actually not to my surprise, she's a great girl. she said, "I would like to too." And so we talked about it, and. The original plan was that we were going to adopt two kids and have two biological kids. And then over the years, God had different plans. And we became certified as foster parents in 2000, took in our first two kids. When we ended up adopting them, we just decided, you know, not long after that, we just decided, you know, there's so many kids, there's so many needs. Let's just forego the biological route and just keep adopting. So here we are with seven now. And yeah,
wow.
That's how we got into foster and adoption.
Wow. So I've seen so many times that when a family shares God's heart for the orphan and is really yielded and obedient, like you've been, he often launches us in a new direction. And you were living a pretty exciting life working in Hollywood. How did you go from Hollywood to establishing Home Forever?
Well, I'm not sure it was exciting. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I did work in film and TV production, did some screenwriting. I got to work on some fun productions with a lot of great people, and that was a lot of fun. And I did that for about 13 years. I continued to do some screenwriting even after I left. I left the production career, but anyway, I guess right after we had taken in our third child and adopted her, I had an old back injury that I suffered on a commercial back in the 90s. It resurfaced, and I was having sciatic pain down my leg. I wasn't able to make the drive to work. My commute to work was about an hour and 15 minutes in the morning, and I wasn't able to sit for more than 3 or 4 minutes at a time. And so I ended up having to take off work. I resigned from that position, which was kind of a drag because I had just gotten a promotion and a nice raise, and it was season 3 of an HBO series, and I love the people I worked with, but again, God had other plans. And so I ended up having to resign and eventually was approved to have back surgery. And in the time leading up to back surgery and in the time recovering from back surgery, I started connecting with people all over the country that were doing foster care adoption, orphan care ministry through churches, parachurch ministries, et cetera. And I realized those were the conversations that really got me excited. And at some point I realized, I'm probably not going to go back to the Hollywood thing because this is really my passion. And so after I was approved to work again, I sat down one night at dinner with our family, and I just prayed to God and dedicated our family to be used by God to promote foster care, adoption, and orphan care to the church. And at the time, I had absolutely no idea what that would look like. Didn't even know, if that was really God's plan, but it clearly was. And so the next thing you know, I'm being asked to speak at churches. I was asked to come on board and the executive director of a brand new ministry here in Southern California. Then I got asked to come on staff with Hope for Orphans, joined staff with them, worked with Hope for Orphans for several years. And then a few years ago, I was asked to move to Texas with Hope for Orphans, and I really didn't feel like the timing was right for our family at the time, and really didn't feel like God was calling our family to Texas. I sought a lot of counsel from pastors and elders and other very wise friends and in my church and elsewhere, and they said, you're already doing this. Why don't you start your own thing? Why don't you build a ministry around what God is already using you for? And so I did resign from Hope for Orphans and continued to do some writing for them over the years. But we had a good relationship but I connected with another gentleman from my church who had a background in international adoption. And we started talking and we started dreaming. And the next thing you know, we're putting together a plan for a nonprofit. And we talked to the church and said, hey, can we come underneath the church's nonprofit status until we can get our own approved by the IRS? And the church said, absolutely, go for it. And so the church supported us as we got going and continues to support us in many ways. And so we birthed Home Forever. And that was August 2012. And we launched as an official 501c3 last year. So we're very, very excited. And just excited to see what God has already done and see what he's going to do in the future.
Yeah, and I've seen that's the case with a lot of orphan ministries. God kind of births them through the local church. Sometimes they stay there. Sometimes God moves them, kind of out and to formalize and become a 501c3. That was the case with Justice for Orphans as well.
Right. And that was our plan all along. And our church has done that with other ministries, supported other ministries as they got on their feet and then helped them to launch out. That's our church is very much about empowering its people to do what God has called them to, do what God has called them to do. And we're not a church that, where the staff is very heavy handed. It's like, no, if God has called you to do this, we'll support you. We'll bless this, your efforts and help you any way we can. But you do what God's called you to do. And we've seen incredible ministries come out of our church because of that.
I'd love to hear that. So I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. To learn about foster care, adoption, and global orphan care, you can visit our website at justicefororphansny.org. My guest today is Johnston Moore, adoptive dad of 7 children through foster care. He's also the co-founder and executive director of Home Forever, a Christian organization which advocates for children and supports those who envision a world where every child has a permanent family. So, Johnston, explain for us what Home Forever does.
Well, we're an advocacy organization, so we don't place children. We don't do a lot of individual projects. We do have something called a foster closet, which is a very tangible ministry, but we also do a lot of intangibles. So I'll sit down one-on-one with many, many couples and individuals too, who just feel like God's calling them to do something in the foster care system or in adoption, but they have questions. They don't really know what there is out there and what it is, you know, that's really a good fit for them. And so I'll sit down with them and help them kind of navigate that and help them understand some of the things they can do, maybe address fears they have. A lot of times families have, they're right there on the brink and ready to take in children, but they're just, they have some sort of nagging fear or, you know, so I help people address those and I look at those issues with them biblically. And so that's one thing that I do. I also, we speak all over the country. I'm very blessed and privileged to be able to speak at many adoption conferences, including the Wait No More conferences that Focus on the Family does. We help churches start foster care ministries, formal or informal. We help families navigate the foster care system. If you've been involved in foster care, you'll often realize that the way it works on paper and the way it works in reality are often two different things. And so a lot of times families will contact us and say, hey, look, you know, our social worker is doing this, or the child's attorney has said this, and what do we do? What's the truth? And so we'll help families, and we'll help them understand what policy says, what state law says, what federal law says. We'll help them with connections that we have, at higher levels that can help get situations straightened out. We try to help people see things biblically. I think a lot of times even Christians who go into this kind of go into it with their own agenda. I know that we've had our own agenda at times, and every time we go into this with our own agenda, God slaps us upside the head and says, no, this is about me and my agenda, not about you and yours. And so we try to help people do this as biblically as possible, realizing that we're always learning ourselves, you know, and very oftentimes we have to be redirected and corrected by God and through others sometimes and through, you know, just directly from Him sometimes. But we do try to help people understand that this is about God and His kingdom. It's not about you and your family.
Yeah.
And so those are some of the things. We also get involved in policy issues. We believe that every child does deserve a permanent home. We don't believe that children should languish in foster care forever. So we look at individual policies, and if policies are in place that maybe are somewhat not child-friendly, put it that way, or not permanency-friendly, then we'll address those. And we've been to Washington, D.C. several times, and we'll continue to go there. One particular law that I have dealt with a lot over the years is the Indian Child Welfare Act, and of course, that's been in the news a lot lately, but...
Yeah, tell us. Tell us about... I know one of the big story in the news is Lexi and the Indian Child Welfare Act. Can you fill us in on that?
Sure. Do we have about 6 hours?
maybe a couple minutes.
I'll give you... Okay. So the Lexi case, right now it's in the Court of Appeals. It's gone to the District Court of Appeals, and the oral arguments have occurred, and so we're waiting for a ruling there. It's been there twice before. And twice before they have sent it back to the juvenile court to correct errors. And so they've actually ruled in the foster parents' favor twice already. We're hoping, obviously very hopeful for another ruling in the foster parents' favor now. But that's the very short version of what's happening right now. If you want more than that, I'd be happy to talk more about that or about ICWA in general. Really up to you.
Yeah. And there's now Lexi was with a foster family She was removed. I know there was a lot of news coverage on that. People
right.
may have saw that in the news. It was a devastating blow to the family and to Lexi, especially.
I would say mostly to Lexi.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's okay. You can tell it better than I can, obviously.
Lexi was a little girl that she had been in two different foster homes before she was placed in this home. She was placed in the Pages home in Southern California as a respite family originally. Everybody approved of it, including the Choctaw Nation. Lexi is 164th Choctaw, which makes her 63/64th not Choctaw. With the Indian Child Welfare Act, depending on the tribe's membership requirements, it doesn't matter what the child's blood quantum is. It doesn't matter if the child has zero previous connection to the tribe or tribal customs, tribal culture at all. But the law applies. And so the Indian Child Welfare Act was invoked. She was allowed to stay in this home to the point where she was attached and she started healing from her past trauma. And she had a lot of past trauma. And so, when a child starts seeing the foster parents, not just calling them mom and dad, but really seeing them as mom and dad and seeing the other kids in the home as their siblings, seeing that as their home, then the system needs to pay attention as far as I'm concerned. I think that there's a time for reunification. There's a time for placement with relatives. But again, you have to take each case into consideration. You have to look at that child's best interest. And at some point that the scales, I think, tip away from reunification and away from family placement and toward permanent placement with a family with which the child has formed strong attachments. And that's what happened in this case. The Pages did not intentionally drag this thing out forever. I mean, originally the child's attorney, the child's former attorney, asked for a do not remove order on the case. And so they did not want the county to remove the child without a judge's order. And that wasn't the Pages that did that. That was the child's attorney. And yet she ended up being taken off the case. Another attorney was brought onto the case. And of course, things have gotten interesting since then. I'll leave it at that. But the bottom line is that I've done a lot of research on this law. I've read the transcripts. I know what the tribes were complaining about back in the 70s. They weren't complaining about kids like Lexi. They weren't concerned about kids like Lexi. Nobody was concerned about kids like Lexi. If the tribes had come to Congress in the 1970s and said, look, we've got these kids living in urban centers that have no connection, no previous connection to tribal life, tribal customs. They have minute traces of Native American blood, and they're being placed in non-Native families, and we need to put a stop to this. Congress would have told them to just leave. They wouldn't have passed this law. But they weren't talking about kids like Lexi. And yet now, the way the law has been twisted and distorted over the years, the law is being applied to kids like this. And many, many children are being hurt by it. We almost lost our two boys because of this law. And that's how we got so aware of it and learned so much about it over the years.
Wow. And so you're pretty good at fighting City Hall at this point. Tell us some other ways that you've helped families and children.
I'll just give a couple of recent examples. There's a family in Indiana that used to live in Southern California, and this family had adopted seven children, all from the same biological mother, so all siblings. There was another sibling that was living with his or her biological father in the southeast somewhere. Another child was born, and because this family, who already had the seven, the adopted mom's sister was able to, and her husband were able to adopt the ninth sibling. So now there were eight placed together in Indiana within very close proximity to each other. And then the mother had a tenth child back in September of last year. And LA County DCFS policy and good child welfare practices would say you need to contact the families that have the siblings. There were going to be no reunification services. The mother had already lost nine kids, and so this child was going to be a fast-track adoption. But LA County, for whatever reason, did not notify the families in Indiana, and they placed the child, the little girl, with a pre-adoptive family here in LA County. And so a couple of months later, the family in Indiana found out about it. She ended up, the adoptive mom called me or texted me and Facebooked me. I don't know. She reached me and she said, look, this is what's happened. What do we do? How can we, the system is saying they want to keep the child where she is, and And, you know, I try to look at each case individually. I look at this case and weigh, okay, she's been in the home for 2 months. That's not a long time. It's not dangerous to move a child after 2 months. She's got 8 siblings in Indiana. Why in the world would they not place this child there? And so I decided, yes, I would help. And so I was able to get them an attorney who knows the system extremely well here. I was able to contact headquarters here and say, look, this is what, you know, what's going on. Headquarters got involved, and which they often do, not always, but often they do. And they lit a fire underneath the ICPC worker. And the next thing you know, the case plan changed to moving the child to Indiana. And she ended up getting placed in Indiana with, you know, so she can grow up with her siblings. So that was one way.
Wonderful.
And another one that hit a lot closer to home, we had a baby boy that we were fostering since birth. He came to us last August. We were totally in love with this little boy, but his grandparents in Colorado stepped forward right at the beginning of the case, and they said, we would like custody. The birth mother moved back to Colorado from L.A. County, and so it looked like that would be the case plan, but the L.A. County worker was dragging her feet, and she was very discouraging to the grandparents. She was saying, you know, derogatory things, basically saying, you know, your daughter will never get her life together. If you want to get custody of your grandson, you need to move here. It's going to take 11 months to do the ICPC, and by then the judge will have terminated your daughter's rights and placed your grandson for adoption. So they were very discouraged, and they didn't know what to do. And they were sitting in Colorado just wringing their hands and pulling out their hair and saying, what do we do here? And so, again, we look at each situation individually, and we said, you know what, these are wonderful people. They're non-offending grandparents. They came forward at birth. There's no reason in the world this little boy shouldn't be placed with them. And there's no reason in the world that the county should be discouraging them. There's no reason in the world that they should tell them it's going to take 11 months. And so, again, contacted people that we know, and they started looking into it. And the next thing you know, LA County has finished its end of the paperwork, and it's all sent to Colorado. And then several months go by. All the paperwork's worked out. It ended up being 7 months instead of 11 months. They came out here. That was another thing that was frustrating. We were very concerned because he had been in our home for, you know, about 6 months, and yet, you know, now the case plan was that he was going to move, and we said, okay, what is the transition plan? And the social worker says, well, I'll take him on an air. I or another worker will take him on an airplane to Denver. And we said, but that's, you know, so you're going to pick him up. You're a virtual stranger. You're going to take him to Denver and hand him off to virtual strangers. And how is that good for him? I said, can the county come up with some sort of funding to either allow them to come here or one of us to take him there so he can have an easier transition? And they said, no, we can't come up with any money. So we ended up finding a family in our church who said, yeah, they can stay with us. If they come here, they can stay with us. And so the grandparents at their own expense came out here, stayed with some friends of ours from our church for several nights. We were able to spend time with him, with them, so that they could get used to them, so he could get used to them and not just be handed off cold like that. Mm-hmm. And so it made the transition a lot smoother. Even the last day, though, the last day they were in town, there was a glitch, and the attorney for the county, or the social worker, saying it's not going to happen today because the courtroom is dark and they're going to have to come back. And we, again, you know, talk to our contacts. A phone call was made, and the next thing you know, they were able to get a different judge's approval, and they were able to take their grandson back to Colorado. And, you know, we stay in touch. The grandparents have said, you know, if anything happens to us and our daughter's not able to take him back, we would love for you guys to have him. You know, will you be his godparents? You know, we stay in touch on Facebook. It's been
wonderful.
It's been awesome. And so again, I mean, these are just ways that we step in and help people fight City Hall, I guess, a couple of tangible ways.
Well, I love to hear that. So as we wrap up, Johnston, what is on your heart that you'd really like our listeners to hear today?
Wow. You know, I've been thinking about this, and there are a lot of things. You know, one thing that I'm just going to say a couple of them real fast. One thing I want people to understand is that that foster care is hard. Adoption from foster care is hard. You know, there's a lot of trauma involved. There's secondary trauma when you take in these kids and deal with a broken system. But the fact is, that doesn't change the call. God's word does not change, and His expectations of His people in relation to these kids doesn't change. And so we need to keep our eyes focused on Him and His mission in the world. and not on our own personal comfort. I think specifically a lot of men are scared to death to do this. I encourage men, I guess, to just get on their knees and go before God and say, look, God, are you calling my family to do this? And if God says yes, then to just deal with their fears and move forward. Recognize that these are fears. They're not, you know, it's not wisdom necessarily. It's a lot of times it's fear-based excuses. And so I just really try to encourage men to trust God and move forward in faith. And then one other thing I would like to say is that the system very oftentimes seems to set up biological family members or biological family and foster families as enemies, combatants. We're not. And we need to recognize that we need to not be for the sake of the children, because I believe that good relationships between foster parents and foster families and biological families can actually reduce the amount of time that a child spends in foster care. I think it can, on the one hand, it can facilitate quicker, safer reunification, because a lot of times these birth parents don't have anybody to champion them as they work their case plans. A lot of times the social workers are just doing their jobs and going through the motions, and they got so many cases, they can't spend a whole lot of time encouraging that birth mom. But we as foster parents can do that. But on the flip side of that, I think that that what we've seen very oftentimes in our family's various cases, we've had birth parents actually sign away their rights so that we could adopt their kids. They've said, you know what, you're giving those kids what we can't give them. And we love our kids enough to want to give them that permanency. And so, and I think the reason they've done that is because they've seen that we've allowed those relationships to continue after the adoption. I think a lot of family members fight till the bitter end because they are afraid that they'll never see the child again. And so if we as foster adoptive parents can be open when it's appropriate to allow those relationships to continue after the adoption, then I think that that can help a lot of these birth parents to relax and say, you know what, I got to get my life together, and I'm not going to continue to work the system to hang on to my rights until the bitter end. I'm just going to allow my child to, you know, to have that permanency that he or she deserves. And so, yeah, I guess those are some of the things that are on my heart. I got a bunch more, but I'll stop.
Okay. Well, Johnston, I just thank you so much for all you are doing on behalf of vulnerable children and families. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And to learn more about Johnston's ministry, Home Forever, you can visit their website, which is home-4-ever.org. To learn more about adoption and foster care or to contact me, Sandra Flack, you can visit our website at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.